let's keep in contact.
Not like last summer.
Not like last summer. Exactly. Let's really write to each other this time.
Don't ever change. Hello and welcome to the Sprocket Podcast, where we are simplifying the good life and fading things out way too fast. My name is Brock Dennis.
That was a quick fade. I'm Aaron Flores, broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We are the show that brings you super irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
Covering bicycling, trains and transit, and simpler living. And today,
sandwiches,
getting whatever sandwich your heart's desire.
Yeah. We had Sarah Merck from fame on the internet.
From fame?
Yes. she's a famous person all the way around. No, she had a stolen bike some time ago, and the story of how she got it back may surprise you. So that'll come up later. But first of all, you and I, sir, let's talk once again about episode 200 live, because that's coming up.
Because we will never tire about talking about episode 200. I will postulate that even after episode 200,
we'll still be talking about
episode 200.
Because it was so great.
It was epic.
Obviously, if you live anywhere in the Portland area, you should be there at Velo Cult Bike Shop in the Hollywood Business District of Portland, Oregon.
I will go so far as to say, if you are not there, you better be in jail or dead.
On Monday, September 22nd.
Jail. And if you're in jail, you should get a pass from the warden.
Between 7 and 9 p.m. Yes, exactly.
You're just ignoring me.
I wasn't ignoring you. I was saying these are the things that you should do if you find yourself incarcerated on the night that we're having our live episode. If you're not...
obey the law. However, if you have broken the law and are sentenced to jail...
Yes, then, do what you can. And can what you can't. If you're not going to be there, stick a sticker on your shirt like Glenn up in Canada did.
That was pretty cool.
I thought when I saw that on Twitter that he was coming down for the show.
I thought that's what that meant too.
Holy hell, that's a long drive just for our podcast. I'm glad.
Both flattered and humble.
Or flight or whatever. I don't know how they get down here, but whatever means. It's probably
car free, right? They're going to bike down.
That's right. Yes. YagBike2PDX.
That's right.
This new hashtag. I'm excited about this. We have Dan Christensen, the tweeting TriMet bus driver. He's going to tell us a story. Sarah Gilbert, who gives bike tours and is a bikey mom, she's going to tell us a story. And then Joe Kermaski, the metal cowboy.
Is he going to tell us a story?
He's going to tell us a story, yes. There's going to be a lot of storytelling, because that's what people like, right?
Well, it's kind of what we do.
Yeah, I exactly.
Mean, I wouldn't call us a journalistic podcast by any means.
I would say we're on the line. I mean, we talk to journalists.
We do talk.
So that has to count for something, right?
Right. And we often steal headlines from Bike Portland.
That's right. That's right. You are almost like Bike Portland. No, we're not.
No, not by a long shot.
No. Apologies, Jonathan. I shouldn't have even had a thought like that.
Sorry.
That was ridiculous. So, yes, again, Velo Cult Bike Shop, Monday, September 22nd, just a week away,
and
7 p.m.
Just to throw it out there, I know for a fact someone is coming all the way from San Francisco just for this. So,
is it just for this?
Sure it is.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't think so. Yeah.
Come on. No one else is going to know that.
But that's pretty cool. Sarah, yeah. We're looking forward to seeing you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was just going to build this, drama. You have no excuse, Portland. People from all over the world.
Well, that's true. That's valid. That stands.
We should mention, though, that this not only is going to be taped live.
Right.
Well, it's not going to be taped at all.
No, we're going to have a cassette tape. We're going to stick it into the recorder, and we're going to go Kerchunk on the record button
and the play button at the same time. We will pause at 30 minutes to flip sides.
That's right. But remember that you, remember that you have to put tape over the holes on the Elton John cassette.
That's right.
Before you actually press record. Otherwise, it won't work.
Anyways, what was it? Not only are we recording this live.
We are taping this live and
and recording it live, but we are also live streaming this, hopefully.
That's right. Yeah. So Aaron Parecki is a friend of Lily's here at the Open Road Studio family. And Aaron
attached to Transportini's?
I think he might produce it. I'm not sure. But he's got 100 miles of cable, and he's going to bring all of those cables to VeloCult, and that means...
And he will plug it into each one of your homes.
That's right, yes. He's going to run these cables individually right into your fiber optic system. So if you don't have fiber optics, you're out of luck. No, just kidding. It's going to be probably on YouTube, and we're going to work out the details here between now and the time that we actually do this. But if you're a fan of the show and... If you're listening, I assume you are. That means you get to listen to the live show and watch the live show on the internet without being there. So, yeah.
It was kind of a long and strange pause.
Also,
I think both of us like had this moment. I don't know. We're digesting burritos here.
We are. I would say I almost feel like Sprocket Podcast Day should be burrito day from here on out. Because I really like burritos.
Having Los Gorditos right over there,
yeah,
it's really difficult to bike by there and not go, it's about dinner time anyway. Yeah.
And that vegan chorizo substitute, the soy rizo, makes a good burrito.
It's all right. Soy curls is also really good.
I'll try that next time.
Yeah, you should try it.
Yeah. Also, if you are observing this live event broadcast on the internet, you want to text in things, Aaron Flores is going to be moderating our Twitter stream.
I will do my best.
Yeah. So if you have something witty you want to say, he may read it. But that means it has to be really witty.
Yes. Or questions.
Yes.
In between each speaker, we are going to take exactly 3 questions.
Well, we'll accept many more questions, but you will choose 3.
I will. Right.
At the most.
I will choose 3. Yeah. Send in all the questions that you can think of, but I will only choose 3 of them.
So this is very exciting. Again, VeloCult. September 22nd, 7 p.m. If you want to ride on fire with the Grilled by Bike crew, they're meeting at Lad Circle at 5:30
Meeting at Lad Circle?
They are.
Oh.
Which means I probably totally won't be riding with them because I'm going to be setting things up.
Oh, yeah. I should probably be responsible.
We'll talk it over. Okay. We'll figure it out. So, Aaron, tell me, why is it that you don't have any friends?
Yeah, I don't have any friends. I don't have any friends.
Apropos seemingly of nothing. But we did talk about this before. It's in the show notes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This is the section called "Aaron has no friends, and here is why."
There we go. It's kind of a cumbersome title.
Well, I think I'm just really used to being alone. Is part of it. Is I bike around the city by myself most times, and like for today was a day of errands. And not errands with an E, errands as I spell my name.
Oh, yes.
Or other iterations of that.
Okay.
Ran into Aaron
Parecki. Yeah.
Thank you. Just quickly said hi as we were biking by each other over Ankeny, and then ran into Aaron Delaney over right outside Next Adventure. And here's the crux of why I don't have friends.
The crux.
So ran into him and we're talking and it's really good conversation. And it turns out we both just arrived to Next Adventure. It wasn't like he was coming out as I was going in.
Oh, okay.
And I'm going to have to admit there is a little part of me that was like, oh, this is going to be weird. We're both going in and like now I've got to like have social energy.
What if we buy the same thing? That would be embarrassing.
Right. And so we're talking and there's just this lull in the conversation. And instead of going like, hey, I'm going to go down to the bargain basement. I'll see you around. I just wandered down to the bargain basement.
Kind of like, oh, hey, all right, I'm leaving now.
Right. Well, I didn't even give him any indication of that.
Oh, okay.
It was almost...
Just kind of wandering off.
Yeah. I just wandered off. He had something to return. And, I was like, hey, you getting all squared away? Yeah, cool. All right. Cool, man. And then just kind of like something caught my eye and I started looking behind me and then started walking and then found myself in the basement.
Okay.
Came back up and
it's common story.
He's gone.
Yeah. I would say just based on what I know about people and human beings, sometimes the same thing. I think you had a very common human experience. I think that's a thing that probably many people do.
Oh, yeah, certainly.
Especially when you don't plan to see someone, you just bump into them, and then, your course of life takes you a different direction than them, even if you're in the same store.
Yeah, well, and I think that has to be someone okay. I don't know too well
yeah.
yet.
Mm-hmm. I think that's okay. Thing is, there's yeah. always room for improvement. So next time you bump into somebody that you didn't expect to meet at a store,
I could say,
Hey,
I'm going to go down to the bargain basement. I'll see you around.
Or would you like to peruse the bargain basement with me?
Worst,
but not
date
in a creepy
ever.
Way.
Yeah.
yeah.
It was just, yeah, later realized, wait a minute, that was an opportunity where I could have said something like, hey, what are you doing? Let's go grab a coffee and hang out and talk and get to know each other better.
Sure.
Maybe not in that kind of weirdly, awkwardly worded way.
You find a way to make it sound cool.
right. But yeah,
you do this cool thing.
I know deep down that I am a friendly guy. I mm-hmm. try to acknowledge that. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I know that for the most part, people like to hang out with me. And, you know, so I don't think like, oh, why don't I have any friends? I realize in this moment, this is why I don't have any friends. It's because I don't have like these social cues. I don't catch on to these opportunities.
I don't know that it's that you don't have friends. I think it's just that maybe you want more quality time with people and you need to figure out how to ask for it.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. I mean, yeah, to say I don't have friends, that's kind of an overstatement.
Yeah.
Well, but
for the sake of making a point.
For the sake of making this point right here.
There we go.
The point being, I don't know how to ask people to hang out yet. So,
well, the lesson is
I'm working on it.
If you see Aaron Flores rolling around Portland, smother him with attention.
Oh, God.
Kill him with kindness.
Someone just tackles me off my bike. We're going to get coffee.
Precisely.
Okay.
Precisely. Well, I had maybe one of the better weekends of my life.
In a new place.
That's overselling it now. Cheers, by the way. You got yourself a cherry tree Fenimore cola?
Yes. Cherry tree cola.
I've got the Oakshire espresso stout, which is fabulous.
This is super sweet, by the way.
Ooh.
I'm going to have to like sit in a dark room.
All right. I got my grandpa's tandem that he built for me. Got it all fixed up.
Oh, yeah.
This tandem is made from two old cruisers, presumably Schwinn's, but I don't know that for sure.
That your grandfather welded together?
My grandfather welded them together into a tandem frame. The mechanic at Velocult, I think, said it was the sketchiest bike he'd ever ridden.
Oh, really?
I'm assuming that means before it was tuned up.
Oh, yeah.
But I think almost all of the parts on this bike were original from the 50s when he built the thing.
No kidding.
50s or early 60s. And so a lot of those things had broken down. The reason we hadn't ridden it much in the past couple of years was that the spoke had broken in the back, making the wheel untrue and not fun to ride. The brake, the drum brake, because it was a coaster bike or a cruiser bike with a coaster brake.
Right.
It was leaking oil or some other fluid. And so it seemed like there was a good time not to ride on that wheel much anymore.
Yeah.
So last Thanksgiving, I treated us to a new wheel for the back. But then I also realized that it needed a new chain, probably a new crank. It turned out a new front wheel. So a lot of parts being replaced.
Yeah.
But
does it still have the drum brake on it?
It has a
new drum
back
brake.
Pedal brake. Okay. Yes, a new coaster brake.
Coaster brake, yeah.
It was on the new wheel that I purchased. So turns out, and this is the tandem that I think my mom and aunt were riding on one time, and they ended up bailing on a downhill because they were trying to stop and couldn't stop.
Oh.
Because it's just a coaster brake, and it's two bikes, and these are heavy, heavy bikes. So the way that worked out is they kind of bailed, Adele and I eventually inherited this bike. It was at our wedding. We rode it down the road at the end of the night, and it was kind of just for show because we rode it down a driveway and then we got in a car and left. But we hadn't really ridden it for several years. So putting it back together, we rode it down to the Selwood River, the Willamette River, Selwood City Park. And they have a nice little beach there.
Yeah.
Great place to dip into the water. Great place to hang out. And we met some friends and we rode it back up. It's a single speed, so it's difficult to ride up hills. But we rode it back up, went to my favorite local establishment, had some brews. And it's good to have the tandem back in action. So, how did you spend your weekend? What do you like to do on your bikes? Where did you go swimming? What beers did you drink?
Let us know.
Yeah. @SprocketPodcast on Twitter.
Also, so, leave us a voicemail.
Right.
At 503-384-7974. Thank you.
Yeah. 503-847-9774. So, hey, with that, let's go to our interview with Sarah Merck. And then but this is a good beer.
We will be right back.
Yes. BRB, folks.
Can I take a picture of you guys?
Please do. Only if you
live tweet it.
Okay. Yeah. Point.
Gotta watch out. Aaron is a grimacer and a pointer.
That's great.
It's very rare that I smile for pictures.
What's your best Twitter name? Is it the Sprocket Podcast?
Just Sprocket Podcast.
Just Sprocket.
Yeah.
I'll do it right now.
Starting with the S.
Cool. Thanks for the beer. That's really good.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and thank Aaron. Aaron did the beer run this time
around.
So.
You're welcome. Yeah. I did my best. Honestly, I mean, I don't have to talk about beer for very long before anyone realizes I know nothing about beer.
Well, I'm not a beer snob myself. I just like the way some of it tastes.
Yeah.
But, you know, my beer interests are out of line with Portland's general beer interests.
I think that might be
right.
The case.
You said nothing hoppy.
Yeah, and there's some bars here that like only have hoppy beer.
Well, and at least there's Apex, and then there's what's the other Alameda.
Yeah,
those are the two I can think of that have an enormous hop over their door.
Yeah,
and there are others. I'm
I don't
sure.
know. There's some like I don't know. Sometimes you go somewhere and they like only have IPAs, and you're like, why?
Because they're delicious. But it really depends. I mean, it's not. Yeah, it's not everybody's bag. Of tea, cup of tea. It's not everybody's flavor.
You could have a bag of tea, right?
Yeah,
that's what goes
it's
in.
It's not my bag of tea, man.
Right.
Yeah. So, anyways, hurrah for non-hop beers. Well, let's introduce you. This is Sarah Merck from. Well, which one are you from first? Because you're from the Mercury, you're from Bitch Media, and you're from Popaganda, which is a subsidiary of Bitch Media.
I'm a journalist who does a lot of different creative projects.
There you go.
But my job is that I'm the online editor of the feminism and pop culture magazine Bitch.
There we go. Yeah. Okay. And Popaganda, Feminist Response to Pop Culture, is a fantastic program which I have been listening to.
Oh, thanks.
And
yeah.
Love it.
Yeah, that's the podcast that I host, Popaganda.
Yes. And you're way more professional than we are. We'll just say that right now. also the author of Sex from Scratch, brand new book that just came out.
Yeah, I just wrote this book about relationships that just came out. It was kind of terrifying, but now it's out there and people are excited about it. It's called Sex from Scratch, Making Your Own Relationship Rules.
Ooh.
There we go.
Yeah.
And if anyone wanted to find you, well, there's that train again. This happens a lot.
It's a beautiful train sound, though.
It really is.
That one was kind of a fast one there, too.
Yeah, I think that might have also been an Amtrak.
Going the other way.
Yeah, the Amtraks are going fast.
Oh, yeah.
The freight trains usually take their time.
Yeah.
So, let's see. I was going to ask, where do people find you on the internet?
Oh, people find me all over the internet.
I think if you just Google,
but the best place to find me, I am on Twitter a lot, and my name on Twitter is Sarah Merck. That's Sarah with an H and then M-I-R-K on Twitter.
There we go. That's simple. It's easy. I like, Aaron, that your hand gesture for Googling was just fists going up and down. Yeah. Or like a very pronounced hunt and peck.
Yes.
Yeah, it's like you're typing with just two fingers.
That's all you type with, right? That's
luckily, luckily, I have a short name, so it doesn't take you too long. It's just two fingers.
So, Sarah, you are a car-free individual at this point. Do you prefer car-free, car-less? Is there a better way to refer to that
in
your mind?
I don't really refer to myself anyway that way. I feel like that's kind of like introducing yourself as vegan or something. You know, I don't own a car. I don't own a car.
Right.
I might own a car if circumstances were different.
So when you go to wash your bike...
I've never washed my bike. What do you mean? Wait a second.
I was going to make some connection on how like vegans make sure that the grill is cleaned off of any kind of meat thing.
So if you
go to... Maybe I should say like get the oil changed on your bike. You have to like have them clean out the car oil first and then oil the chain on your bike.
What kind of a bike do you have where you have to change the oil on
it? You have to change the oil on your chain, man.
No, I'm really, really bad about bike maintenance.
Oh, yeah.
I'm one of those people that like forgets to do laundry and like can't eat three meals a day and that kind of thing. And so the idea of like regularly lubing my chain and pumping up my tires is very foreign concept to me. I literally have things falling off of my bike right now that I just put back on like 3 times a day.
See, I think that's the thing you have to have is not necessarily the facility in bike maintenance that you can fix everything, but just enough to make it work.
Yeah, I know just enough bike maintenance to really get into trouble.
Yeah,
where I'm like, oh, I know how to fix my brakes.
And you go to fix it, and it's even worse than when it started. Yes,
like pretty much every time I try to adjust my brakes, it becomes this tragic, epic tale. And now I've been getting more comfortable just paying other people to fix it and do a good job.
There you go. And see, that's like
We talked about that a little bit last episode.
Yeah, too. Did we? Because I was going to say we all love to the folks at Bike Farm. I love what they're all about. Also, I don't have time necessarily to cram bike knowledge repair into my head. And so I prefer to have someone do it for me, and I'm willing to pay someone for it.
Well, yeah, and I think it's, I don't want to say it's a values thing, but it kind of is a values thing. Like, you value your time not spending or not being spent on bike maintenance, whereas I value the act of taking things apart and putting it back together.
Yeah, and maybe it depends on how much you can afford to. Like, I just got to the point in my life where I can finally afford to pay someone to do almost everything on my bike for me.
Rolling in it.
Yeah.
Whereas a couple of years ago, I was much more of a do-it-yourself mechanic.
Actually, I'm feeling really well off right now because I can afford to buy whatever sandwich I want in the world.
Isn't that lovely?
And it's like no big deal to pay somebody to change a flat tire for me.
Right,
and those are two, to me, incredible luxuries where... It used to be if I got a flat tire, it was like, well, there's my day.
Guess I'm not going anywhere.
So I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to do that. I don't have the $15. And now I'm excited to have the $15 to pay someone to do that.
Yeah.
Horrible, very easy job that brings me to tears every time I do it.
Feel like royalty. Here, fix this.
Yeah.
I will go get a sandwich of my choosing.
I think it's easy to feel like royalty when you lower your standards.
That's what our podcast is all about.
Lowering your
standards.
Honestly,
yeah. So what's your take, Sarah, on Portland as a place to live without a car? Would you say it is good, middling, best?
Well, let's see. I've lived here for about 6 years, a little over 6 years now without a car, and it's been great and fun and fine for me. I mean, I think there's, you need to have, I don't know, for me, it's easy. I'm the kind of person that it's easy to live without a car. I work only about 3 miles from where I live. So it's a really easy bike ride to and from work. And I don't have any kids, so I don't have to haul kids around. And I don't really mind getting wet and cold in the winter, so that's okay.
That's good. Where do you come from?
I actually grew up in a small town in Southern California.
Okay.
Where it's 80 degrees and sunny all the time.
So is the rain still a novelty or?
You know, maybe. I appreciate the rain in the winter to a certain extent. I like the noise of the rain. I like the sound of the rain. I don't like getting soaking wet all the time.
Okay.
But it's kind of the only option.
Right.
I was going to say, do you think of it as far as getting wet? Do you think of it as... just kind of one of those things like, well, this is the trade-off.
Yeah.
Or do you just, I don't know, because there are people that really do enjoy like, yeah, I love riding in the rain. And sometimes that's me. Sometimes,
you know, I would say I'm not hardcore that way. I'm more just, it's more of a hassle to try not to get wet. You know, some people, I think their winter riding strategy is that they like get like fancy gear and like wear rain pants and are like really prepared.
Sure.
My strategy is I just get wet and then it dries.
Right. Yeah. See, that's what Dave Foyt and Michael Tetta
are
both proponents of that. They're like, you know, you'll dry out.
Yeah. You know, I've slowly over the course of 6 years been replacing all of my clothes with clothes that are good for biking in and dry easily.
There we go.
It's like instead of getting special bike gear, that's too much work
just
to haul that around.
Clothes.
I've just slowly acclimated an entirely new wardrobe. But now I pretty much wear only like stretchy, dry fast material.
Yeah. I was going to say, do you prefer wool or poly? Or something else?
I prefer poly, I guess, with like a wool sweater. And then like, I actually do have like a nice rain jacket. I think that's pretty key. I think you need a nice rain jacket and I think you need gloves that are not waterproof because then otherwise your hands turn into like these freezing cold claws.
Oh, yes.
You know?
No one likes prunes.
Okay, but anyway, but the
cold
point is
prunes.
That it's nice. I like biking around Portland. I think it's the biking is the best way to experience a city and to get around it. And for me, it's always fun to bike around town. I'm always exploring, like finding new places and seeing new things. And it helps me appreciate the city, I think.
Yeah. And aren't you also involved in Know Your City?
Know Your City. It's a local arts nonprofit here in town, and I got involved with them back when they very first started about 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And they've published some of my work. I wrote and edited a series of comics about Oregon history, a little collection of 10 comics about little known and marginalized stories in Oregon's past.
Yeah.
And that collection was published by Know Your City.
Mm-hmm.
So they acted as the publisher of those comics, and now you can get the whole collection at Powell's or all over town.
Nice.
Yeah.
And I would imagine those are things that you learned as you were just kind of wandering around the town, either on your bike or on foot.
You know, I think it does help you experience a city in a more intimate way to be biking around it, because mm-hmm. you're right on the street. You're seeing all these little details. You know, biking around Southeast Portland, for example, past all these warehouses and old industrial sites. I think in a car, I'm much more prone to miss it. You know, I'm focused on the music that I'm playing. I'm thinking about where I'm going. And instead, when I'm biking around a neighborhood like that, you pay attention to all the details. You're like, oh, wow, this building has this really interesting old structure on it. What is that?
Mm-hmm.
Or this building has this really cool old sign. I wonder what the story is there.
And you might be lucky enough, once you get that curiosity, to find a zine that explains why that's the case.
Yeah, I guess as I'm biking around, I'm always sort of thinking about and cataloging the interesting things that I see. And then every once in a while, you come across somebody who actually can explain them to you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's talk about the tragedy that we invited you in here to share with us. So there was a point at which you lost your bicycle. And so maybe first...
Things just got Barbara Walters in here.
I know. Thank you. I appreciate it. That's high praise, really. Tell us, first of all, what this bike is like.
Oh, well, this is a bike that I moved to Portland 6 years ago, like I said, right out of graduating from college in Iowa, in the Midwest. And I wanted to move to Portland in part because I wanted to ride a bike, because I wanted to get around without a car. And I knew that Portland was a good city for biking. And so the very first thing I did when I got here was try and find a bike to buy. So I hadn't even moved. I had put my stuff in the house that I was moving into off Alberta. And then as soon as I sort of moved the boxes into the place, I left the house immediately and walked down the street. Hoping I would run across a bike shop.
There we go.
That was my grand plan, was I'll walk around until I find a bike shop. And I did. I found the Community Cycling Center on Alberta.
Yeah, that's not too far.
I went about 20 blocks, and then I came across a bike shop. And what I was looking for, what I knew I wanted, was a hybrid bike. So like a good, easy city riding bike with upright handlebars and tall enough for me. I'm really tall. I'm 6 feet tall. So I needed a really tall hybrid bike, upright handlebars, preferably blue, because that's my favorite color.
There we go.
And so I walked 20 blocks, and outside the Community Cycling Center is a hybrid bike that's blue with upright handlebars. That is a perfect fit for me.
It's all of your specifications.
It's perfect. Yeah. And I sort of look at it, and I'm like, I think that's the bike I should get. And so I test ride it around, and it's a perfect fit. It's exactly great, and it's $300, and it's all new parts, so I buy it. Actually, I have to walk to the bank to get $300, and then I walk back. and along the walk to the bank, because the closest bank at that time, Alberta has changed now, and there's banks on the street, but it used to be like the closest bank was like another mile away. So I walk to the bank, and as I'm walking back, wandering through the streets, I come across Bike Farm, Repair Collective.
There we go.
And I'm like, oh, cool. So I buy the bike, and I walk it over to Bike Farm, which I've just discovered. And they help me put a rack on it, and they help me put lights on it, and they help me put fenders on it. And so I've had that same bike, and I've ridden it every day for about 6 years.
So it's safe to say you have an attachment to this bike.
Yeah.
I have an attachment to this bike. I've ridden all over the state of Oregon on this bike. It's just a perfect bike for me. Now, it's got sort of built it up. It's got cute red handlebar grips and a generator light, and it's just a really great bike for me.
Yeah, and I mean, I suppose you could say anytime you put parts on a bicycle, it's an investment, but especially the generator light. Those things are more expensive than other parts that you could get. So
yeah, that was a gift from a very kind boyfriend who didn't want me riding without lights, which was nice.
It is convenient.
Yeah,
you never have to worry about that. Well, I guess you can worry about them being stolen, but it's harder to steal them.
It's really hard to steal. And usually when someone's trying to steal them, they don't know what it is.
Right.
They're just trying to take
it. They end up breaking it.
So anyway, so it's a Univega. It's a Univega Via Charisma. So I wrote, like I was saying, I wrote it every day for about 6 years until.
Until.
Until. One day.
One day.
Was that the sound effect, Aaron? Bump, bump, bump.
Bump, bump, bump.
In a world.
In a world where you go downtown Portland on a Friday night and you go to see a movie. And as you're locking up your bike, your friend shows up and waves to you and you're distracted and you lock up. But it turns out you didn't actually lock your bike. You just locked your lock.
The wheel or...
No, I just locked my lock to itself. So I locked the lock to the bike rack. And I left the bike there unlocked in downtown Portland on a Friday night in Director Park, which is right in the center of Portland.
Yeah, it's a very new looking park.
Yeah.
It's a shiny park. You wouldn't think that crime would happen there.
You wouldn't think this was a crime ridden park. It's full of babies and an elephant's deli.
Yeah.
Yet so close to that quinoa salad. My
Seriously.
Bike was stolen. So I come out of the movie and the bike's gone. Just gone. The lock's there. And I'm like, I'm a little defeatist. I'm like, well,
that's it.
It's just gone.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, at that point, there's no one to chase down. It's just gone.
No one to shake a fist at.
No one to shake a fist at, you know. And so.
Was there a moment of like disbelief for you?
I was sort of, no, you know what? I'm kind of a cynic, so I've been waiting for the shoe to drop on that one for a long time.
Yeah.
It's like,
you're like, shit, like, it finally happened.
I've been expecting.
Like it was just a matter of a roll of the dice and finally got snake eyes.
Exactly. Every day I'm afraid my bike is going to get stolen and I have other people's bikes getting stolen. So I was like, well, this is my time, you know, it's inevitable. You know, death comes to us all, and our bikes eventually get stolen. So
even a death of the soul.
Yeah, and I was in a good mood. It was a good movie.
Okay, there we go.
But anyway, so I the thing about most stories about bikes getting stolen is, I think they usually involve some act of heroism on the part of the victim. You know, like they pursued you, like posted on Craigslist, and you went to their house and you stole it. You got
and
it
I met
back.
I met the guy who was trying to sell it on Craigslist, and then I rode away. Ha.
Yeah, you tracked them down and you got it, or through your own like charm and wisdom and street smarts, you find it. This story involves no heroism on my part.
Okay.
And instead involves heroism on the part of the person that wound up with the bike.
Right,
really?
Right.
Which is what makes it really interesting. So the best thing I could do is I sort of wandered around looking for the bike for a little bit. I was just sort of walking around, and then I went home, and luckily I'd written down the serial number.
There we go.
I'm a reporter, and I write and
Good
I
move.
And I wrote a lot about bike theft in Portland. And so once I wrote about bike theft in Portland, I knew that pretty much the only thing you can do is write down your serial number.
Yeah. As I was prepping for this today, I came across those articles and I thought, oh, it's a good thing those are out there.
Yeah. Hopefully that's helpful. That's something I learned. I didn't write mine down until I wrote a big story about bikes getting stolen in Portland. But so I had my serial number and I had a photo of my bike, which is also key.
Mm-hmm.
And I've put it up on Stolen Bike Listings, which is a website, stolenbikelistings.org, I think. Here in Portland.
I think we've used that, haven't we, Aaron?
Yes.
Okay.
And I filed a police report too. Anyway, so then the next day I wake up and I don't know what to do exactly. It's like, how do you get your bike back? I guess you just sort of look around for it. So I went to the bank and I got a bunch of money out in case I saw it. I thought I could like try and do the heroic thing.
Sure.
I was like, I had sort of this heroic vision in my mind. Like, I'm going to see the bike and I'm going to go chase after them. And I'm going to be like, I'll give you $100.
What's it worth to you?
Give me back my bike.
Yeah.
100, 200.
You know, I sort of had all these visions running through my head of how it would be. So I go down to the Stump Town downtown, which has a big plate glass window on Second Avenue where you can watch all these people biking by.
And this is all the same night?
No, this is the next day.
This is the next day.
I took a break in the middle. I went to bed and came back. So the next day, I just go there and I'm just sort of looking at the internet and watching bikes go by and sort of like wondering if someone's going to ride by on my bike and I can do this heroic act of chasing them down. And then I get an email. I get an email from a really weird email address.
Yeah.
It's like, yourbike@yahoo.com.
Right, right. I have this here. Can I read it?
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
It says, Dear Sarah, I have your bike. Please email a phone number as I am not well connected. I have a funny story to tell you. Best wishes, Jeffrey.
Yeah, so that on its own it's a little creepy.
Yeah, I was like, well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
The last part about, I have a funny story to tell you, I was like, what is this going to be?
It's kind of intriguing. Yeah.
Funny story is, I found this rag, and it, I think it smells like chloroform. You want to smell it?
Yeah, the funny story is I stole your bike. So I, it's funny to me. Anyway,
right, right.
It was just sitting there.
Money's funny, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I write the guy right back and give him my phone number and say, hey, you know, there's a reward for this. I'm offering a reward of $100. Just, you know, putting that out there, no questions asked. And then my phone rings and he calls me and I'm excited because I was afraid it wouldn't actually work or I'd write him back and he'd get scared or something. But he calls me and he tells me his name and he tells me that he has my bike. And then he starts talking about how it's such a sweet bike.
Yeah.
And he's like, this bike is great. Like, I love the blue. I love the handlebars.
I'm going to keep it.
Yeah, it's like,
unless you give me.
Yeah.
And from everything you've told us, that's true.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he says something like, this is a sweet ass bike. It's so great.
Oh, yes. Your bike is sweet. It hauls ass.
Your bike is sweet. It hauls ass.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of proud. Yeah. You know, I'm like, wow. I think it is, but from the objective perspective of a total stranger who's now riding on my bicycle, it's a pretty cool bike. And mm-hmm. so I felt a little proud about that.
Yeah.
But I also wasn't sure what to do next. And so I said, well, can we meet up in a park and swap it? And I'll give you this reward for it. And he said, well, you had a $100 reward, but that seems like too much to me.
So this sounds like honesty.
Yeah. And so that was a point where I really was like, oh, okay, well, how much seems fair to you? And he's like, I don't know. And I was like, how about $40? And he's like, that's great.
All right.
So we decided to meet up in Cooch Park, which is in Northwest Portland. And so I took a car to go there and showed up and like jumped out and there's my bike locked to a tree. And
just hanging out.
Just hanging out. And this guy named Jeffrey is there and he tells me his funny story.
Yeah. So what is this funny story?
The funny story is that he was downtown on Friday night, only a few blocks away from Director Park,
uh-huh.
when at like a homeless center there where you can hang out at night. And this sort of, as he describes, like sort of a meth head looking guy comes up and offers to sell him this bike mm-hmm. for $20 cash.
Okay.
And he only has $10. So he gives the guy $10 and takes the bike. And then he starts riding at home and he said he lived pretty far out in Forest Park
mm-hmm.
And that it was a great bike to ride home. And as he's riding it, he realizes that it's not just your regular meth head Huffy.
Right.
This is somebody's sweet bike that hauls ass. And he really liked the light. He liked the pedals. He liked the handlebar grips. And he's like, this is somebody's bike that they put time and care into.
Right.
It's clearly been stolen. And so the next morning he bikes all the way back into Portland from Forest Park and goes to the library, the public library where you can use the computers, and sets up an email address. And he just Googles stolen bike Portland and the stolen bike listings come up. And mine is the very first one with a photo and everything.
Oh, wow. Oh. So this is a quick turnaround.
It's a quick turnaround. Yeah, this is within. And so then he sets up this email address. He makes an email address just to email me, emails me. And within 24 hours... he's returned my bike to me,
yeah,
fully intact, nothing taken off of it, and I can just bike away on it.
Wow.
And so I was really impressed with just that he took that he was able to recognize that this was a thing that had been stolen from somebody that they loved and that they cared and that they would want back.
Yeah.
And I think that that's kind of like when somebody steals something from you, like your beloved bicycle, that's really the thing that I think makes people sad about it,
mm-hmm.
is that somebody's... doesn't respect that it's an item that you care about and have a lot of sentimental value for, and you're like, how can somebody be so disrespectful as to steal it?
Right.
You know, if it was just about the money, I could understand.
Right. But really, violence has been done to this person's lifestyle.
They violated my identity.
Yeah.
And so I really respect and admire that he recognized that it was something special to somebody and then took the time and energy to come back into town, to go to the library, to mm-hmm. look me up, to track me down, to do some detective work, and to put himself on the line by emailing me and setting that up.
Because right.
I think that's kind of a scary thing to do, especially if you're homeless, to sort of put yourself in a situation where potentially somebody could call the police.
Well, he doesn't know if it's going to be a sting or
whatever. Yeah, he doesn't
know
if it's going to be a sting. He doesn't know how I'm going to react. And so I felt a debt of gratitude to him.
Had you thought about bringing a heavy?
A heavy?
Like having someone there.
I think I am the heavy.
Get your back or whatever.
I think I am the heaviest.
No disrespect to that. I would have assumed so. I just wasn't sure.
I didn't feel nervous about it.
Okay. Yeah.
But I did want to meet, you know, I probably wouldn't have gone to somebody's house.
Right.
We met in a park, which makes me feel kind of safe.
And, public place.
Yeah. And I'm, you know, I'm pretty tall and pretty strong. And
right.
I'm good at giving people really menacing glares.
You'd be okay. Yeah.
I hope so.
Did you ever see this fellow again?
I've never seen him again.
Okay.
No. Blake Portland, I think, did an interview with him.
Yes.
And I donated the rest of the money to Sisters of the Road, which seemed good.
Which is a fine organization.
Yeah, they're a homeless organization in downtown. And I just, you know, I think it's an interesting story of, you know, there's a really bad public image of homeless people that's like, you know, seeing them as people who are not like the rest of us humans.
Right.
You know?
Craven and evil or something.
And so I think this was a real opportunity to see a homeless person doing something that is a really moral and respectable act. And,
indeed. Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
So I felt good about that.
Yeah. And while we're mentioning Sisters of the Road, they make a fine plate of lunch. And they're open to anybody. You don't have to, you can have an address and still show up and hang out with people, which I did one time and it's great. Yeah. So I recommend it. If you're in Portland, you got nothing to do, go down there. Or even if you have stuff to do, clear some time in your schedule. So maybe just in closing, you have written all these articles about bike theft. What do you recommend, both from your own experience and stuff you've learned? Like, what are some good things to do before or after a theft?
Well, you know what has been really helpful for me, besides embracing the inevitable that your bike will someday get stolen and you should make peace with the end.
Stare deeply into the abyss.
I think you should first do some personal catharsis through that moment. But you know what's been the most helpful thing for me, actually, is getting these locking, I don't know what they're called, and you guys can probably help me out, but they're like these little locking skewers that lock all the parts of your bike.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So actually my bike, as long as it's locked up with a U-lock, is pretty unstealable. Mm-hmm. There's these little, do you know what those things are called?
Yeah, I don't know what they're called, but yeah, it's a skewer that has a hex head and you tighten them down.
Yeah, that's been a lifesaver for me, really, is so the saddle, the wheels. The saddle and the wheels are locked on with a hex key.
There we go.
That only I have.
Okay. And it's not just a standard hex. It's like a special hex?
It's a special hex.
Okay.
Special hex.
Stay back.
Yeah, so I've got a special hex. So I have a special hex, and then there's a generator light, which is attached to the bike.
Yes.
And then the rear light is also attached to the bike. It's integrated.
Bolted on or integrated.
Yeah. And so it's like part of the fender.
Yeah.
And so those are the things that get stolen the most often. Mm-hmm. I have another bike, actually, that's like, I got all kinds of problems. And one of its problems is that nothing is bolted on. And every time I feel like every time I ride it, something gets stolen off of it.
Something gets lifted off.
Yeah. I always forget to take the light off. I always forget to, I don't know. I just, like, my light constantly gets stolen off there. And I've had the saddle stolen off there twice.
Yeah.
Even with the first time was a quick release. The second time it was bolted on. It was stolen both times.
Losing a saddle is no fun.
I know.
I lost a saddle after
really
a show
stranded.
At the Doug Fir one night.
Or you're really stranded.
During, after, I guess. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, so that's the biggest thing for preventing bike part theft has been getting that locking hex thingy.
There you go.
And getting integrated lights. And then, otherwise, I mean, it's so basic that everyone should just do it, and you're going to feel so dumb if you don't do it.
So is it the...
Write down your serial number.
Infinity 3D security?
Ooh, I don't know what it's
called.
There's
a couple of different brands of them.
Yeah, there's a couple different brands. Yeah.
Pinhead Locks is another
Pinhead,
brand.
Yeah. I think that's what I have is Pinhead.
Okay.
But anyway, so yeah, the thing that's so basic that you're going to feel so dumb if you don't do when your bike is stolen, inevitably, as doom comes upon us all, is write down your serial number.
There we go.
Which I wish they would be easier to find on bikes. On mine, I had to flip over the bike.
It's usually on the bottom bracket.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. On mine, it's on the down tube.
Oh.
Rather inaccessible in most places. But you got lucky then, I guess.
Yeah. So on mine, you have to flip it over, you have to look at it, you have to write it down, and then you have to not lose where you wrote it down.
Right.
So for
I'd say put it on Google Docs.
Yeah, maybe something like
don't
that.
Don't tweet it.
Well, and there's also the 529 project.
Oh, right. Yeah, 529.
You can register, or 529.
Yeah, which is, that's a kind of a newer thing that's popping up here in Portland, an anti-theft. I know less about that than I should.
It's more than just a bike registry, but it's a bike registry.
Okay, yeah.
Where you can, I just registered mine, actually. Oh. You submit your serial number and take a couple pictures of your bike, And the funny thing is when I was registering mine via my iPod, it wouldn't let me just grab a picture of my bike out of my library. It required me to take a picture right then and there as I was registering.
You have to take a new picture of your bike.
So, yeah, it's really, really wanting the present bicycle as it is or as it was once you registered.
Yeah, I think that's the other thing. I mean, the two simple steps, get a serial number written down and take a picture of your bike.
There
we go.
Because so often on those stolen bike listings, people don't have a picture of it.
Oh, yeah.
And don't even know what the make of their bike is. They're like, it's white.
Mm-hmm. I got this.
It's got two wheels.
Go through the impound lot. Yeah. Well, and a picture being worth 1,000 words is that's a decent deal. So everyone listening to this has no excuse. Go out right now. Find your bike serial number if you have not yet done so.
Write it down.
Put it on Google. Do not Twitter it.
And we can make that call to action.
That's right. Yes, we can, because we're no longer on terrestrial radio. Any other tips? Anything else that... where should you look?
About bike theft?
Yeah. Like if your bike is stolen, what's a good place to look? We mentioned the bike registry.
I mean, I guess you can look online. I actually, think it's a pretty decent idea to bike around town looking for your bike.
There we go.
Yeah. You know, actually in college my bike was stolen a bunch of times because I went to college in a really small town in Iowa. Uh-huh. I went to a small liberal arts school, so it's a campus. And we had a campus bikes program that were like these bright yellow loner bikes that you could borrow.
Oh, okay. Kind of like the ones that Portland used to have.
I unfortunately also had a bright yellow bike.
Oh.
So
people would often take it thinking it was one of the campus
bikes. A lot of people would leave their bikes unlocked on campus.
Right.
But mine was the only one that would consistently wander off.
Right.
And I had a little lock, but I often didn't use it. And so I just sort of leave it, you know, outside my dorm room or the pile of bikes, and I would come up, my bike would be gone. And you know what my tactic was then was I would just walk kind of in concentric circles until I eventually found it.
Okay.
And I was always found. It was always like...
Well, because it was always on campus.
It was usually on campus or right off campus in somebody's backyard.
And probably not a malicious stealing, you think? Maybe most of the time?
I think often like a drunken stealing.
Okay, yeah. Just kind of like, that's one of those yellow bikes.
But I feel like if you're drunken biking, you're not going to get that far.
And you might go in concentric circles.
Exactly. I would like wander around campus kind of systematically until I found it.
Nice. So that's actually a good idea. Go out and look and see.
Yeah.
Hasn't worked for Emily Finch's Bach feats yet.
Still.
But so it goes.
Yeah. And I mean, my bike was stolen right in downtown Portland. Then it was sold like 3 blocks away. So if I had done my concentric circle system...
You might have
run into it right then. So
you might have got it back for $20,
right? Or $10,
or $10.
As we now know that the seller was willing to go that far.
Yeah. Discount.
Well, I'm glad you got your bike back, Sarah.
I am too.
I'm glad you still have it. Does it have a name?
No.
Okay, that's all right. I don't name my bike either. It's shame on me too.
Yep. I just am not. I'm not sappy that way.
Right.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I'm a sentimental fool.
There's nothing wrong with that. We're both right, I think.
You're right, and I'm right.
That's it.
We're both right.
All right, Sarah. It is Sarah Merck on Twitter. And let's see, again.
Sex from Scratch.
Yes, consult my list. Portland Mercury, Bitch Media,
Portland Mercury.
And the Popaganda Feminist Response to Pop Culture Podcast.
Thanks so much, you guys.
Go check it out, everybody. Yeah, you are welcome. Thank you for coming in.
There we go.
So what's next?
Nailed it.
And we're back.
And we're back.
Sorry. Should we go with the contest first?
Yeah. We should announce a winner.
So this was the contest to find out what do people say when they're passed too closely with a car. And why don't we start with Sarah Merck's example, because she didn't want to record herself with this, but she did say... she tells people that they shouldn't yell at people.
You shouldn't yell at strangers.
That's it. So when a stranger yells at her, she says, "You shouldn't yell at strangers," which I liked.
I like that a lot, actually.
Yeah. So our four finalists, because we have 4 spoke cards to give away, and we'll get in touch with these folks and send them to them in the U.S. mail.
Yeah.
Or possibly the United Postal Service.
Do you have that list?
I'm not going to use FedEx because that's far too expensive. James says, scenario, my mother-in-law, a 58-year-old experienced cyclist living in Santa Barbara, California, was out for a ride in July when a truck towing a horse trailer sped up, past her buzzing too close, so as to make a turn, which cut her off so badly she had to skid stop. The driver, a young adult male, yelled, "Go fuck yourself." Her reply, "Only if you get a note from your mother." That's good. That deserves like a spoke card. Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Doug writes in with, in reference to the retort to a close pass, I fall into the kill them with kindness group. Good for you, sir.
Mm-hmm.
I usually respond with an upbeat, non-sarcastic, have a nice day kind of comment. You aren't going to change anyone's minds or get across your own point of view by shouting back at somebody. Maybe it makes you feel better or lets out some anger for a moment or two, but it's not the best action. Some days I just put up an invisible bubble around myself that repels any and all comments that are shouted at me, making me impervious to them. I always arrive at my destination happy when I ride in my imaginary bubble. It's a very positive mental practice.
I like this. And this seems fitting with Doug. Doug seems like a good guy.
Yeah.
I would say that's probably actually a good idea. Don't say anything out of anger. Don't retort in.
I agree with that.
To the point where, like, my whole best day everything, that's kind of sarcastic.
It started out that way, didn't it?
It did.
Yeah.
I think we got more sincere as time went on. And I think I've gotten less judgmental and more sincere as I've said it.
Funny how those two things go hand in hand.
But I think Doug's right. So he gets a spoke card. Oh, yeah. Yes. Do you have those, by the way?
Oh.
What noise do they make when you shake them in the air?
I was going to do one of those.
Yes. That almost sounds like that's like what it would sound like if it was on your bike and it was in the spokes.
Oh,
like
I
the
love
playing cards.
No, I love that sound.
You could almost
that's
do that
I
with these.
That's how I know I'm going really fast.
Yeah. So, yes. Next, Glenn says, "I'm behind but you're in the past." That's my homonym love for close call drivers. Love it.
And Todd called in this one.
That's right. Let me pull that up. Here's Todd.
Build me a teleporter.
Yeah, better.
Build me a teleporter, yes. Which is a good idea.
Yeah, I really like the sort of the layers of sentiment behind that, in that, I'm getting honked at because I'm in this person's way of getting to from point A to point B.
Right, right.
You know, so if you want me out of your way, build me a teleporter.
Exactly. So
he also gets extra points for having called in.
Yes. Yes, indeed. We like that. 503-847-9774. Well, and that's actually good because the rest of this would fit into a different category, which is...
We got mail. Hey, we got mail.
The mail segment. Todd sent us some pictures of his setup. I've got them pulled up over here so we can look at them, which is very helpful to the listening audience. But Todd says, let me see here. I am the guy who left the phone message. Just listened this last week and said you couldn't identify me. This is me. Lol. Love the show. He says he drives a commercial vehicle over the road, so he has a lot of time to listen. He thinks he's our third Republican voting listener, really a libertarian conservative, but vote Republican until the Libertarian Party gets their shit together.
I don't think
he described it that. He says establishes itself better.
Oh, I mean, establish yourself, guys.
I live in the most tiny of houses and I have the shortest commute to work because he lives in the cab of his truck and he lives in his truck. Yeah, yeah. So when he commutes to work, he has to go in the front seat. But he sent us some pictures here, and it's really cool because you've seen these, of course. You know, he's got his whole setup there. He has his bike helmet hung in the back, the sleeper cab. And I was telling you, Aaron, that this kind of appeals to me because, if I didn't have anything tying me down, I would probably also be an overland truck driver and going to see new places and, burning fossil fuels for the most useful purpose,
I think,
to bring other people their shit. And then using my bicycle when I wanted to go on my personal stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I'm often coming across as anti-automobile,
mm-hmm.
but delivery drivers get a pass.
Yeah,
you know,
right?
Because we all like stuff.
We like getting our shit in the mail.
Yeah. We all like going to the grocery store and getting things that were made in Battle Creek, Michigan.
Right.
Here in Portland.
Definitely.
I'm talking
some of my favorite things
cereal.
Are made in Battle Creek. The last picture that Todd sent us was of his truck. Well, it's the back of his truck and the bike hanging on there, which you don't see that a lot, but that's super cool. That's also black and red, which I think you probably have a thing for.
I do have a thing for it. I want to send him a sticker. I want to send him a sticker that says one less semi truck to put on his bike.
Yes. Well, I think there is a one less truck sticker.
Oh, there is.
Yeah,
but
totally.
It needs to say semi truck.
Right. You could stencil it in.
There you go.
Yeah, Sharpie.
Just because how cool it would be to have a bike mounted on a semi-truck that also says one less.
Yes, semi-truck. Yes. Well, it's better than, well, it's like when you see a semi-truck towing another semi-truck.
Yeah, yes.
It's better than that. So what else do we have in the mail, Aaron?
What else do we have? Funny you should ask. Eric writes to us, here in the Couve, they've started, I skipped something. But
oh, it's
here.
Okay. Do you want to do that first?
Well, I've already started with Eric.
Okay. So this is Vancouver, Washington, which is called the Couve in
Couve,
local parlance.
For all y'all who are not in on the joke-ish, whatever.
Yes.
They've started putting full-size ads on the back of buses that read, "Every lane is a bike lane." It's pretty cool to see what I've been teaching my kids about taking the lane reinforced, nice and big for all the drivers to see.
Yeah. Congratulations, Eric. And Eric's a guy I've known for a while. And I am very impressed that he's teaching his children to take the lane.
Well, and that's interesting that it's happening in Vancouver, Washington.
Right.
Where if I'm correct, Washington state law anyways, I don't know, maybe it's different in Vancouver, but in Washington, your bikes don't get the lane.
Oh, it's true. It's true, actually. Oh, so there's a wrinkle in that one that, well, Eric, I'll let you figure that one out. I think it's nice to teach children how to safely bike in the street and share the road with traffic in a way where they're not afraid of the car. It's assertive. It's, again, I'm not a licensed parent. And I can't give parenting advice. But I would say that, I think there's, because so many parents you see with great intentions teaching their children to be terrified of the road. And you definitely want to teach people to be cautious. But I also appreciate people being taught at a younger age to claim their right on the road as a person, just like every other person that's on the road. So,
And safety doesn't necessarily equate being afraid.
Right.
Safety, I mean, there is a certain fear of like not wanting your children to get run over that,
which is completely legitimate.
Yeah,
like, there's nothing wrong with that.
Might drive somebody to teach their child to be somewhat afraid of the road, but safety doesn't have to entail reinforcing fears or frightening everybody.
Right. Well, the trick is you just have to know that there are a lot of assholes out there behind the wheels of cars, and You gotta make sure you know how to interact with them, both in a way that tells them that you're a person and you deserve places on the road as well as they do, and in a way that keeps you from getting killed by assholes behind the steering wheels of cars.
Yeah.
So, I would like to know what more people think about that.
Well,
send us your mail.
This is something that's been coming up a lot for me recently, is the sort of rights to the road. And I don't know if there's like an influx of a lot of newer drivers here in Portland, or if it's just maybe I'm taking more busy streets these days, so maybe it's that too.
There is an influx of new drivers in Portland.
Okay. Is there really? Well, we are experiencing population growth, so I guess that that would... a lot of number of drivers that either don't know or just I'm gonna give them the benefit of the doubt that just don't know how to drive with cyclists in the road, especially when it comes to like knowing how much room to give and how much space to give, especially when passing.
Well, it's the laziness of the brake pedal. The brake pedal is an easy thing to use, but not everyone wants to.
It's that's also true.
We could talk about this for hours.
But we still have more things, like new Patreon donors.
Yes.
Glenn Cubish and Matt Kelly.
Yeah. Is it Cubish or Kubish? Tell us, Glenn.
I think we've had this.
Have we? Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
And I can't remember now which way it went. I mean, I think we talked to him in person and asked him.
Oh, true.
When he was here for Film by Bike last year.
So, yes.
So,
ask him
apologies.
Once.
Please tell us again.
Yeah. Ask him twice. Shame on us. yeah, thank you so much. And Patreon, of course, is the donation curation platform. That was a really garbled way to say it. It's a new way for you to donate to the show, and you can give whatever amount you want to, and we appreciate everyone who's doing it. We thought we were in the black, but it turns out we actually spend more on the show than we thought we did. I thought we did. I messed up the spreadsheet. So anyways, we're like halfway to making our show costs. So if you like the show, you want to help us get there, please join us. It's patreon.com/thesprocketpodcast. We have a link on our site at thesprocketpodcast.com. And you guys are the best. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you guys. Yeah. Even if you're not donating, like,
seriously.
Honestly, like all the people I've met who've listened to the podcast.
Right.
Cool people.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
That includes you.
The listener.
And you know who you are.
Corey Poole sends us, since there was a conversation about the cost of traveling with a bike, I wanted to let everyone know that travel with a skateboard is typically easy and free.
Typical Corey Poole response. He's totally right.
If I recall correctly, there was a bit of like back and forth between him and Johnny K.
It was
like all in appreciation of each other.
Yes, but, yes.
Many airlines will allow you to bring a skateboard on as a personal item. This is true too, despite being oversized.
Yeah.
And once you get where you are going, you can easily bring your skateboard on any form of mass transit. You could also just skate to your final destination. From inner southeast Portland, it only takes around 45 minutes to skate out to the airport. Lastly, I've never heard of a hotel having a problem with you bringing your board into your room.
Yeah.
All caps, skate everywhere.
Skate everywhere. I love that.
Yeah, I kind of want like a very friendly rivalry of like skate and bike.
Totally.
Kind of thing. And Corey, I think you should start a podcast, like the Sprocket.
The Skate Portland podcast.
Yeah, the Sprocket or Bike Portland version for skaters.
The Bearing.
The Bearing podcast. Yeah.
The Trucks podcast.
Let us know. Let us know what you need. How can we get you into this used car?
That's right.
/podcast.
What? Oh, okay. lastly.
Next up from Gene. You guys should check these guys out. They are totally cool, made in America, and I own one, and it rocks.
Yes, and this is the American-made EcoSpeed
Electric Assist.
Yeah, and
you've got that up right there?
I do, yeah. This is kind of cool, because it's... Have you ever seen a bicycle that has, like, a gasoline motor attached to it?
Yeah.
And you're like, what the fuck? Why?
I'm not very fond of this.
Why?
Yeah.
Why exactly?
Why have you put these two things together that are not meant to be together?
It sounds like a guy's, like, riding a weed eater or something down the street.
Yeah,
kind of is.
It usually is like a modified engine off of like a lawnmower or a weed eater.
Yeah, yeah.
And it usually smells because they're not like mixing the gas and oil correctly.
Oh,
or
is that why? Okay.
Well, yeah, most weed eaters are two-stroke engines.
Two-stroke is a very delicate mixture.
Which you have to mix the oil in with the gasoline.
Easy to imbalance, yeah. But what kind of a podcast is this anyways? Yes, the EcoSpeed.
Welcome to the landscaping podcast.
The EcoSpeed, it looks like one of those engines, but it's an electric motor. It is movable from one bike to another. You can hook it up to almost any bicycle, and it helps. It helps you with many things. There's a picture on this Kickstarter page of a guy standing at the elevation of 10,000 feet. He got there with this Eco Assist. Let me get this EcoSpeed. The assist. And then there's also there's a kayak here behind a tadpole recumbent and tadpole trike recumbent, and I am assuming that is also being towed by an EcoSpeed. So they claim the benefits are that pedal power together giving you exercise while going faster, farther, and up steeper hills can make you a better person.
I like this idea.
This is very interesting. So we might get in touch with these folks sometime and be like, hey, what's up with your electric motor?
Tell us.
But yes, and thank you to Gene for sending that in to us. So we'll have a link to that on our site. Last thing, I just had this idea just now. So if I'm full of crap, let me know.
I'll let you know.
But hey, you, listener.
You.
Do you want to be a part of episode 200? Besides all the ways that we mentioned before, you should call us and just say, hey, this is, insert your name here, and I'm listening to the Sprocket Podcast. And if you call 503-847-9774, you can leave your voicemail there. And why don't we do like a montage of all of our listeners?
Yeah.
Like, what if everybody called in?
Which means we also need to include the Kellys.
That's right. That's right, yeah. And
they've often called us. I don't think we've posted any of them on the show like we promised that we would.
Oh, how many of them? I thought they just called the one time.
It was like 2 or 3 times.
Oh, okay. Well, in that case, it's about time.
They're archived anyway.
Yeah, we'll get them back. Yeah. So Kellys, don't feel like you have to call. But everybody else, I mean, unless you want to. Everybody else, call in your name.
We'll take anyone.
Give us some short greeting, and we'll cobble that all together into a thing. And you can be a part of the beginning of episode 200. So there's your call to action.
There you go. We can make now.
Are you ready to put this baby to bed?
Let's get the hell out of here.
I feel like I could have said that in a more cool way.
I felt like I could have said that in a nicer way.
Aaron, you ready to put this baby to bed?
I'm ready to put this baby to bed.
I think we both achieved our goals there.
There we go. There's room for improvement for all of us. Find us on the internet at thesprocketpodcast.com. Send feedback via email to thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. Call or text us at 503-847-9774. Twitter to @sprocketpodcast. Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for our theme music. Thanks to Herbird for our headline sounder. And thanks to our sustaining donors, Logan Smith, Shadowfoot, Katharina Melengard, Roger Grigsby, Wayne Norman, Doug Robertson, Ethan Georgie, Justin Martin, Eric Iverson, Cameron Lean, Richard Wazinski, Tim Mooney, Orange and Purple, Glenn Kubish, and Matt Kelly.
Holy shit, that's a lot of generous people.
Thank you all.
Brush your teeth, go to bed. Introduce you.
You have a gold phone and you have gold nail polish.
I know, I'm kind of into gold these days.
So when you change your nail polish, are you going to have to change
your
phone?
Yeah, I just throw away my phone and buy a new one every week. I don't know if I told you this, but I'm really rich. Did you know that?
Rolling in money.
Yeah.
A Sprocket Studios production.